Hello and welcome to the Lifetime Athlete Podcast. Here, our mission is to help you achieve peak performance at any age and to stay hard to kill. This happens to be the month of May, and that's Human Locomotion Month here at TLA. And we are now on episode number 129, Do Runners Need Orthotics? And guys, you are here today with your hosts, Jay-Z and PK. Good morning, PK.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I am good. You know, I was doing a little problem solving yesterday in my mechanical room. Had to replace a sensor for the well pump controller and do a few things, and got the water working well again. And I'm just feeling happy that I can take a nice shower and the water doesn't cut off on me.
Yeah, I tell you what, I love to see you out there problem solving and just handling your business. You're a handler of business.
I want to be anyway.
You are, man.
Well, and so there's a nice segue. How do we handle this business of, you know, of today's show? And of course, this week we have the masterclass every week on Wednesday here at the Lifetime Athlete, and the topic is kind of a comprehensive one, helping athletes and runners be able to select the proper shoe for their foot type and needs. Also looking at the topic of orthotics and even exercise and its relationship on foot health. Well, that's on the blog and it's on the YouTube channel. And we're also talking about this topic today here on the pod. And again, I'll restate, if you don't mind, the focus we're going to use for today's show. Do runners need orthotics?
It's a great question. I think that, you know, if you surveyed 100 avid and amateur runners, you could potentially get 100 different opinions. So that's why we're coming to you as the expert. So what's the answer to that question? High level.
Wow. Yeah, over time, you know, many decades and having some specialty training and gait mechanics and orthotic fabrication and kind of working in and around this industry of foot health and runner performance and whatnot, I would say this. Try to answer that question with one word. Do runners need orthotics? Maybe. I love saying that. But really, if I take it a little further, I might actually say, probably not.
I love that. I like that I didn't, you know, have to get in there and sort of shoehorn you. Into a position. Probably not. I like that. I really want to explore that, because that's sort of counter to a lot of the purveyors of orthotics and really physical therapy, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think before everybody gets all hot and bothered, we want to make sure that we preface this by saying we're going to have a science meets common sense academic discussion on this topic.
I love it. I'm here to learn. Let's get into it. Let's start with the basics. What exactly is an orthotic?
It is a replacement insole or sock liner, depending on how you want to describe that, for the shoe.
And is it? You know, I think of them as sort of blue-soled custom. Is that a wrong conception? Is it just all sorts of things that go in there?
Yeah, all sorts of things. And so this replacement insole that we're putting in the shoe, you know, sometimes it's fancier terms are used, like it's called a device, which almost makes me laugh a little bit. But it's usually something that's more substantial than the stock version. I mean, that's especially in athletic shoes, that's one place where the shoe companies can save a little money. You know, they just have a little, you know, sheet of material that they pop in there. And in most shoes, not every shoe has one. But yeah, so the most of those are removable. And then this idea, oh, I can put something else in that might be different, maybe better. And we'll get into that. But there's really two classes of these products, as you indicated. There are the over-the-counter products, and they may have a base that's made out of like a shell. You know, it's a plastic or cork or foam. And then there's probably a cloth or even another type of foam for a top cover. And so these things can slip into the shoe and, again, be a little bit more substantial. The these over-the-counter models, or off-the-shelf, however you'd like to say that, they'll range in price from about $20 to $60. And they come in standard shoe sizes for the most part, and they're made to fit most foot types. So there'll be some distinctions such as, oh, this one is narrow versus wide, or low versus high arch. And that's kind of one side of the orthotic equation or replacement insole scenario. The other are these, again, I think you used the word custom devices that are probably made from impressions or casts or even in digitized measurements of the client's foot. And then they'll use some of the materials that we talked about earlier, but also a lot of times they're forming that shell out of a thermoplastic or a carbon fiber material. It's usually done in a lab. And sometimes there are various wedges known as posts that are placed underneath or within that to kind of try to, if you will, steer the foot in weight bearing. And we'll definitely get into that. And then because it's custom, the top cover options also include some fancy things like synthetic leather. And you know, you can really be fashionable even though it's down in your shoe and nobody sees it. You know, you're more fashionable.
John, I tell you, I love synthetic leather that's in the inside of my shoe that no one sees, that ultimately ends up smelling like my feet. It is the dopest fashion statement.
I'm against it actually, because it's slippery, and unless you're using it for a dress shoe application, it doesn't work well in the
athletic population. Right. Okay. So I was clearly joking. All right, that's, you know, that makes sense. I think that I'm not surprised, but you've advanced my education that orthotic could also be something that you just, like a super feed or something that you may have got to purchase on your own and put in. So what are they supposed to do? I mean, from a sort of an informed academic perspective, what is an orthotic designed to provide?
This is a tough one, I think, to do justice. And so if I'm going to say, I think what I'll do is I'll make a statement and then I'll try to flesh it out with some points. And so, you know, if I put it simply, the goal of an orthotic is to normalize or positively affect or impact the biomechanical function of the human foot. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, oh man, gosh, yeah, it's, you know, you hear these terms like corrective device. It's like, okay, well, maybe that's a term. So the first thing that an orthotic will do is, or will try to do, let me say it that way, it will increase what's known as total contact. So basically that's just total contact with the foot. And it's trying to eliminate airspace in what we would call the foot to shoe to ground interface. Mm-hmm. And there's a chance that can optimize the pressure to surface area relationship, between, again, the foot, the shoe, and the ground. So we have, pressure spread over a larger surface area, and sometimes that can be sometimes desirable.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So it's mapping the bottom of the foot and eliminating any of that, the gaps in the airspace.
Yeah. And then the next thing we're going to say is, well, the orthotic is probably, at least in some cases, trying to cushion the foot. And you can tell how I'm couching these words, to potentially help with shock absorption, which is the dissipation of ground reaction force when our foot hits the ground. Sometimes the devices that have that as a goal are called accommodative devices. So that's the second thing. Now, the next one, this is where things get really controversial. And, I don't want to beat on anybody too hard. I want to be kind. But the idea would be based on an older podiatric model, which has pretty much now been debunked, that we're going to use the orthotic to lock the foot into a theoretically ideal or neutral position. Mm-hmm. And I've got something I want to say about that. I'm actually... I need to wander around my office for a moment to find a journal that an article's been laying open for quite a while, but I want to grab that. I'll be right back.
Okay.
So looking at an editorial from the Journal of Orthopedic and Sports Physical Therapy, and this is one of these things where the authors are talking about the subtalar joint neutral position. So that's that idea that there's a neutral position that the foot needs to be locked into with the orthotic. It says, if it never worked, why are we still using it? And so there is, this kind of convention out there, that's been around for decades. Like, well, if we make the orthotic to fix the foot in this neutral position, then life is going to be good. Well, it's the interesting thing. When you look at the gait studies, that what's called subtalar joint neutral position, I won't even describe it. I'll just say it's a position that you can put the foot in and examine. Most of the research shows that most people don't even use that position when their foot is on the ground. It's only attained in the air. So it's kind of like, whoa, man, we've got to look at how we're doing things. So again, that would be the third thing. So we're at the total contact. We want to try to maybe provide some cushioning. There was a thought for a while that we're going to lock that foot up in a nice neutral position and make it optimal. And then the last thing, which kind of gets into some of the stuff that we've been talking about here on this podcast and also in the masterclass for a couple of weeks, is we want to control the rate, magnitude, and duration of pronation. And mm-hmm. I think that's a nicer way of saying it. And this is the quote unquote arch support to lessen collapsing arches or overloaded tissues. And those really make up the goals of an orthotic. And that's, I think as succinct as I can be.
Sure. So that's what they're supposed to do. Begs the question, do they actually work?
So this is a wonderful opportunity to go back and try to address those things and to be objective, science and common sense coming together here at the Lifetime Athlete. Hey guys, thanks for being with us. We love you. the honest answer, no, or at least not nearly as well as some people believe. In other words, we're saying do orthotics do all those things I just mentioned. And I've got many stories of people who've literally had religious experiences with their orthotics. Some have strapped or taped them to their feet at night while they were sleeping. And there have been some people who actually, in kind of a contorted way, believe they were born with a plastic deficiency. In other words, your humans are supposed to have plastic underneath their feet to function well. And I say this, it don't make sense, brah.
it sure don't. When we filter that through our common sense lens, that makes no sense.
So let's go back to total contact, first of all. So with total contact, they can do that to some extent. And this can help with kind of what's called arch fill. Generally, when you look at the medial longitudinal arch of the foot, normal to high arches have a little airspace there. And so if we fill in there, maybe that can be done. And also, if the heel is cupped a bit, it will encapsulate the natural fat pad on our heel bone or calcaneus. But here's really the thing with doing all that. That may actually have a greater benefit in standing still than in locomotion because of some things that we've been talking about and we'll talk about more. So when you stand still, yeah, you can fill in those spaces and maybe that's good, but otherwise it may be not actually that useful.
Interesting. Okay.
So now we look at cushioning, and this is a really cool one because the literature is – I think it's somewhat mixed, although it's kind of biased in the direction I'll describe, where most of the research shows that shock absorption at, foot strike and as we move into the early phases of stance, when our foot's on the ground, is mostly accomplished by the quadricep muscles. The powerful quads in the front of the thigh, which yours are impressive, dude. So the effect of an orthotic on that will depend on the individual's gait mechanics. And studies have shown that if you put cushioned orthotics inside of thick cushioned shoes, and you've got this really big pillow condition, that will in some cases ironically lead to higher impact forces at strike than the barefoot condition, which is almost fascinating to think about.
It does make sense though, because if you think about you're in bare feet and you have to run across a pool or a parking lot or something, you absolutely change how you do it as opposed to if you had shoes on to lessen the impact. So I think that that's an actual thing that we can think about a situation.
Oh, precisely. I mean, you nailed that. And I oftentimes use that example. I was working with a few athletes last night, and you know, we were talking about strike mechanics and you know, shoes and grass as part of a workout. But you know, when you look at the whole concept of the heel strike, we're generally supposed to do that softly in walking. But if you, and that's what I said to the group, I said, if any of you took your shoes off and I asked you to sprint barefoot down that concrete sidewalk, how many of you would hit your heels? And of course, nobody said they would. And I said, well, you know, we need to keep thinking like that. So yeah, what happens is chronic shoe wear will sometimes cause a loss of our best neurological function. And so we really don't know where the foot is. It's sleepy. And, you know, we just get into the bad habit of heel striking hard and slamming it down. So that's what shows up in these studies. But there's a weakness in much of this research, you know, trying to be a critical consumer of research, in that not a lot of these are long-term studies. You know, they're looking at days to weeks. And so the human's a brilliant beast. We're going to adapt over time. So my assumption is that it's highly probable the ground reaction forces would kind of normalize over time. And so we don't want to react with alarm. But in general, I'd say, you know, cushioning, it has a place when we're on hard surfaces, which are not natural, but orthotics don't do too much to enhance that.
Yeah, and the thought that's kind of coming into my head is that if you're, it seems like the most immediate, your foot's sore, so you do something at the foot when it's a more holistic picture, and that sort of cushioning scenario that you just described, where it could actually, you know, more cushioning could lead to less cushioning and using the quads, that makes complete sense to me, because it's just sort of a ramification of, you know, it's a chain reaction, right? Where you're not, where you're just looking at the front, but it's a trickle down effect.
Yeah. Well, obviously we're always, and I think today we'll kind of, you know, connect back to that yeah, we want to see what's happening at the foot, but also about, let's go up the chain, the lower extremity, now the whole body. And really, if we make movement optimal, things just work and we have less need for, you know, extrinsic devices of any type.
Got it. Okay. What else has happened?
Well, there's that third, goal of an orthotic, which would be to, you know, put the foot into this neutral position and possibly hold it there. So I called that locking up the foot. And to me, that sounds like jail. and yeah, and I think this is a bad goal, actually, you know, partly because the research doesn't really support it. But the foot, as we know from previous talks, has to be dynamic, not static, and has to be free to go through that claw to paw to claw conversion with every stance phase. Hit like a claw, soften up into a paw to adapt, and then get rigid again into a claw to push off. And if that means that, you know, just by definition, that means there's not one position that the foot's going to use. That's erroneous to believe so. And, you know, several studies have even shown that the foot simply will just pronate on top of a hard orthotic inside the shoe. And, you know, now that we have, you know, technology to detect that, it's really kind of blown apart that industry.
Yeah. I mean, what I'm thinking about is when I've overlocked in ski boots in the past and just what that does and just how it you might feel like I really want to be like right locked into the skis, but it completely shuts down the other function if you get it over tight, right? That's at least what I'm imagining, and it's very visceral.
Yeah, so here I like that analogy, because like the idea would be the goal of a person who might say, yes, let's use a rigid orthotic and let's lock up the foot in this neutral position. It would be to do that and just make the foot perfect, whereas we know the foot's going to overpower that and be dynamic because that's natural. Now, in the ski boot, you actually can lock the ankle so much that now more forces are going up the chain, and that's one. It's actually valuable in skiing to some extent, but it's one reason why we have so many knee injuries, because there's less degrees of freedom below the knee. So guess what's going to happen is, you know, the body's going to take more force at a hinge joint, which doesn't like lateral rotary forces to any great extent.
Exactly. And I think that what's interesting, I mean, in my setup, as we've talked about, not to take it totally off off course here, but I've got a pretty rigid, like plastic for cross country skiing ski boot that I leave pretty loose. So it's almost like just a, you know, to use the orthotic perspective, it's kind of like a stable place in which my foot can actually do what you're just saying, you know, the paw to claw motion.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're accomplishing there is you're getting enough freedom to move forward, backward, but
yes,
getting some lateral stability, which, you know, again, instinctively, you're doing what your body needs. And so I salute you for being a brilliant beast.
All right. Well, that's hyper praise. Is there anything else that we should consider if the orthotics actually work?
Yeah, and folks, thanks for hanging on, because this is deep stuff. That last thing I talked about, controlling or lessening these pronatory mechanisms. Well, actually, yeah, to some degree, that we can, you know, an orthotic can do that. It can affect rate, magnitude, and duration of pronation. But it depends on many factors, including, well, what's the individual's body weight? What's the mobility they have within that foot and body? What is their unique style of gait? What kind of orthotic did we put in? What kind of shoe is it in? What surface are they on? So forth. So here's the kicker. Unless someone has what we call, you know, like a bony deformity, you know, like a shape change in their foot, which can, sometimes it's hereditary, but most time it's due to, you know, injury, trauma, etc. Well, that's the only time when you really need custom fabrication to fit those unique features of the foot. And all the studies will show that the off-the-shelf products are every bit as good as the more expensive ones in, you know, slightly modifying these pronatory mechanisms.
That's very interesting. We've talked about that offline, that, you know, the off the shelf versus the custom. And that's certainly not what the marketing is doing. Interesting.
Well, and if I just finish this, that point up, I would say a lot of people thought I was crazy, and maybe still do, but you know, when someone would come in and literally just demand orthotics, you know, I say, well, maybe I could talk you out of them, but at least let me try to talk you into, you know, saving some money here. And you know, let's look at something simple. Let's even possibly look at it as temporary. Ooh, you know, careful saying that. And I bring that up because we never want to ignore the power of placebo or whatever, you know, whatever witchcraft you believe in. If you stick like a couple slices of raw potato under your foot and you believe it's going to do something for you, it very well may.
Absolutely. I rubbed some American cheese on my sore ankle and I felt great the other day.
That's probably better than eating it, at least if it's the Kraft singles.
All right. So let's talk about specifically runners and like the, clearly, you know, the masterclass has a lot, and locomotion has a lot to do with runners and of various skill levels. And so my question is, can more runners do what they do without an orthotic?
Yep. But it's hard as hell. It's hard as hell because we have to, or I have to, convince them of that. And again, whether it's
why is it hard?
Yeah, whether they're a long-term user or they're just saying, I need this right now. It comes down to this. Most runners, they just don't want to run less. Temporarily, it's very difficult to make those adjustments. But if a movement problem and pain exists, that's really the thing we need to do, is have them run less while we address problems. But most of them would rather strap on the orthotic and shuffle through a few more ugly miles than ever cutting back and really fixing the darned problem.
So how does that conversation shake out? Because obviously you're having a frank conversation. You're like, all right, here's, you know, if we really want to fix it holistically, you're going to run less, or this is, the orthotic is essentially just a way to, it's a band-aid. And what's the response that you get in terms of the mentality, or how's that conversation go?
This is total guesswork, but it's based on a lot of experience. And I would say maybe it's another rule of thirds. You know, we talk about the rule of thirds with respect to metabolism or photography or whatever, but now we're talking about the rule of thirds. So I would say immediately one third of the people totally can't hear and won't accept any such proposition and usually fire me pretty rapidly, that's fine. We weren't going to have a relationship anyway. Then there's another third that, you know, it's a process and, you know, there's partial buy-in and eventually, you know, there's some amount of result with whatever it is we're trying to get to, which is optimal function and peak performance. And then there's that other third that's like, yep, I think you might know something, you know, whatever credentials and experience you have, and you seem to present it with some amount of conviction, and I'm open-minded and I'm not biased or overly skeptical. I'm going to do it. They get outstanding results. Imagine that.
Well, I mean, there's that does make sense. And at the same time, it's got to be challenging for you because you're just delivering the information to help them get to where they want to go. And you don't have an agenda about how you get there.
Yeah. Don't shoot the messenger or even the piano player. Thanks, Elton sure. John. And one of the reason is marketing and even social belief systems. They're incredibly strong. I mean, you know, we're told to believe so many things. You can talk about it in many other areas, but a lot of people will just say, I need to have this orthotic and it is my salvation. And that's a tough thing, you know, trying to bend people, trying to change them, whether it's behavior or beliefs, that's low return on investment work. And so I just automatically will recognize that if it's that lower third, I'm just not the person for them because they don't want what, the path that I'm offering, which I think is the one true, good, right one, but whatever.
Right. I hear you.
So I said that, you know, again, these social beliefs are very strong. Well, here's the other side of it. Most people are incredibly weak. And what I mean by that is they have weak, atrophied, modern shoe-wearing feet. And I'm not totally down on shoes. I mean, if you're a listener, you know that. I think shoes are awesome and they do things for us. And there's certain contexts where we need them or benefit from them. But if we accept the fact that as modern humans, if we, you know, have been wearing shoes all the time, our foot structures get weak, they get neurologically deficient, all those things we've been talking about. And then ultimately, taking the time to go through and strengthen them really probably is the most appropriate path. But sometimes, well, even if I just keep these weak feet and put the Band-Aid on, I can still do some things. I think that's that magic bullet that many people are seeking. And, you know, in the end, I don't think it works as well.
Right. And that does make sense. I mean, it's not hard to imagine that conversation unfolding.
Yeah. And so if we kind of were going along, well, how do most runners do away with an orthotic? So we come up with this whole, okay, let's cut back your training a bit and let's find ways to maintain or build conditioning in other ways. And now we want to improve not just the foot function, but total body movement quality. So it always comes back to the same, whether it's rooted in physical therapy, strength and conditioning, peak performance, the same thing. We're trying to optimize the beast. And by doing that and gradually building up the training progression using some, you know, models, heuristics, whatever, you know, like if we're talking about overall training, like a seasonal or a block periodization model, or whether we're just talking about what we're doing within workouts as far as the progressions, you know, from low to high load and slow to fast speeds, et cetera. You know, so yeah, we need to do that. And ultimately, if we can, we want to strengthen the foot with some simple barefoot training, just basic stuff like doing some of your exercises where you can barefoot, lunges, deadlifts, you know, you name it, one leg balance exercises, and then move into a few drills and possibly jogging on soft surface like grass. And then, you know, ultimately, you know, a bit of controlled jumping, landing. Those things practically will bulletproof the foot in the case of a person who has, you know, some potential for trainability. And really, we also want to find the right shoe. And so that's another part of this. You know, if you have the right shoe, you're less likely to need an orthotic. And so that's whether we're talking about this is the shoe right now because you have these needs that are somewhat immediate with an injury, or long-term, here's how your foot basically functions. You may want to select this type of shoe for your general training, even if you're not a runner, but specifically if you're a runner, hey, there's the masterclass, you know, that if a person wants to really see and have all the examples of the different types of shoes and orthotics and figure out what they need or don't need, that's again what we do.
Absolutely. I like it. Find the right shoe. And it is a nuanced and very personal search. And so it really does need to be involved like that.
Yeah. And then I just transition right along and say, well, okay, I'm a big fan of temporary orthotic use. So who needs them on a temporary basis? And that's really that. I think that's the gold. That's the money.
That's a great question.
Because they can get us from, gosh, I'm in pain and I'm not functioning well, to now I'm pain-free and I'm functioning well without needing a quote-unquote device. And so those people who have a lot of generalized foot fatigue or soreness or the pain of an acute injury, many times, and again, whether we're doing all those things we talked about before or how much of that's placebo, who knows? But we get benefits giving someone an orthotic to use in that circumstance. And especially if we do it in conjunction with training modifications that I was alluding to earlier, we can support or offload the foot to some degree. And it's not necessary to do that 100%, just get it down enough, those loads and forces below the threshold for inflammation.
I like that. But even if you're employing this, you're saying, all right, this is going to be for a short period of time to get through the recovery with the goal of, this isn't the permanent fix. This is part of a orchestrated plan to recover overall functionality.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, okay, so you've got pain because your foot's a little messed up because, you know, it's lost some of this function. So let's help it to heal a little bit, but hey, we can help you restore that function. And then you don't need this device anymore. That was only valuable when you were, you know, trying to get through, you know, the load management and healing phase.
Got it. Makes sense.
So also, I think we always want to say those who have good potential to retrain their foot and gait. And that's most people. I want to say it's better than 66%. It might be closer to 80% that, okay, look, if you don't have a huge amount of breakdown and your health is overall pretty good, you know, you can go through the things to strengthen the foot, the leg, the hips, the trunk, and then also understand how to improve your gait. You know, yes, it's a natural thing, but it's entirely trainable. And so whether we're teaching a motivated athlete how to, drive out through an acceleration phase and get upright with max velocity, or we're just teaching any person, hey, you know, you need to be aware of this claw to paw to claw conversion when you're walking to the mailbox. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love it. Got it.
So, yeah, and I always like to say this when we're dealing with these orthotics, is say, stay patient and watch out for addiction. So the patient thing comes in. A lot of times the foot will feel better. Oh, man, that feels actually pretty good. We're getting some of that stuff we were talking about earlier. I think I'm just going to go out and test it. I'm like, well, no, there's no reason to test it. The thing hasn't changed in 2 days. We need to work through this process. So be aware of that. And I try to do that with kindness. And then also, hey, watch out for addiction, because if that device helped you to get through a problem, it sets up some, almost like opiate level action in the brain. It's like, oh man, I always need that. You know, I'm going to put them in a special golden box every night because, you know, you don't, you know, go ahead and whip them. Actually, you know, dispose of properly for the safety of the environment. But yeah, you know sure. What I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, and summing that up, you know, for, you know, that's this whole temporary use of orthotics. If you can restore the natural athleticism in the beast, always the goal. In most cases, if that foot's being capable of trained, you don't have any long-term need for specialized crap, you know, stuck in all your shoes, and you feel crippled if you forget it somewhere.
I think that that's a good, very tangible, actionable long-term goal is that I like the idea of that, being able to work through it. So what about, like, for instance, if you're listening, you're still with us, we appreciate it. And if you said, hey, I've been a user of orthotics, I've been a lifer, and you've made an impact, Jay-Z, what do I do from now if I've just been a religious believer and user of them so far?
Well, I mean, I would say great caution, because this is where we get into maybe even trying to answer your question like, well, who should be a long-term user of orthotics.
Sure, sure.
There is a portion of our population. It's smaller than it's thought to be, in my opinion, but feet that have significant breakdown or deformity. And I know deformity is not a mean word at all. It's just like, okay, that we've got that shape change, you know. And in cases like that, we really can't strengthen our way out of the condition. You know, when you're looking at how all that works. And so we have to accept some amount of functionality in the beast is possibly forever lost. And therefore we might turn to getting some extrinsic help. And so maybe some examples. First of all, you hear a person use this term in air quotes, like collapsed arches, you know, mm-hmm. So if we have really, not a flexible foot, or you know, a foot that's really you know, staying pronated for you know, inappropriate times or distances within the stance cycle, but really just a foot that it's got bony change where you know, the arch no longer looks like an arch. It looks like a, you know, turned the other way like a banana on X-ray. You know, that we're probably not going to change that. Ruptures of major tendons like the tibialis posterior, flexor hallucis longus, or peroneus longus. You know, those things do major functions in the foot. And so if we've got a tendon like that, even if it's been repaired a lot of times, we're going to have to help the foot. It just can't quite get back to managing those loads like it did before. And certainly any type of post-traumatic arthritis, you know, if you have, whether that's through a disease process or, you know, accidents and what have you, those are feet that just don't do well with repetitive impacts at 3 to 6 times body weight. And so either the foot will eventually fail or something will break further up the chain. And so these are people that definitely are going to need some help and can possibly get it from an orthotic.
Interesting. That's very interesting. And that does that absolutely makes sense. If there is a legitimate long-term deficiency, then it can be useful.
Yeah. And I would say in this case, the orthotic or orthosis, you know, if you think orthosis like a prosthesis or mm-hmm. prosthetic, you know, it can allow a person to have a decent or reasonable, which is reasonable is probably a key word, amount of function and life quality, and hopefully without doing further damage to, you know, either the tissues in their foot or again elsewhere in their body. So that's really wonderful when we can use these things for folks who just can't get their function back in more holistic ways.
Right.
And I would lastly say I would never look at this as trying to say use that orthotic you know, as a brace to allow for unlimited amounts of running or other activities, but in a prudent way to incorporate it into a long-term plan that manages orthopedic health as well as systemic health.
Yeah, that makes sense. Of course, you would take the conversation there because that's what you do. You contextualize science meeting common sense.
I try. That's
you
all.
You do more than try, my man.
Oh, great. Well, so folks, thank you so much for being with us today. And if you're liking this kind of information, please rate and review wherever you listen to the podcast. That helps so much. And we're eager to get some more of those into our queue. And also check the ever-expanding content, you know, on these topics and many others. There's a lot out there already in terms of articles and podcasts and videos. And also on the gram, on Twitter, LinkedIn, you know, and more is always coming. So this is the game that we play and it's fun. But please just consider doing some of those things. And if you love the idea of the masterclass, can't quite make it to Wednesday noon, 5:20, you can also hit contact at thelifetimeathlete.com and bring the mojo to your club, organization, or business.
I love it. Well, John, thank you for walking through this today.
Yeah, thanks, PK, and thanks, guys. Catch you next time.
Adios.